Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, the Woj Pod. Get the inside scoop on all the biggest NBA news as the biggest names in the game join ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski for the Woj Pod, featuring in-depth conversations, breaking news reactions and analysis, and coverage of the biggest events on the NBA calendar, as well as an occasional deep dive into some of the most notable events in NBA history. The playoffs are in full swing, so be sure to check it out. Follow the Woj Pod as well at the right time wherever you get your podcast. Also, The Ultimate Fighter is back, the reality show that brings top MMA prospects together under one roof to compete for a UFC contract is on ESPN+. Featherweight champ Alexander Volkanovski and Brian Ortega coach men's bantamweights and middleweights who have put their lives on hold for the chance to pursue their UFC dreams. Stream new episodes every Tuesday, only on ESPN+. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/UFC. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear. More driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time. Tried to tell y'all to be careful messing with Serbia. Also, we got your stories about getting balled up by future professional ballers. But first, oh, Bucks Nets. Like, Gabe, I need you to tell me if this is a negative reflection on me as a human being, what I am about to tell you. So I went out there. I came a little bolder than most people were willing to. I picked the Milwaukee Bucks to beat the Brooklyn Nets in this here playoff series, right? Like, I just thought that the Bucks had the things you needed to get it done, and to stop Giannis wasn't quite as simple as I thought that people were making it out to be. Like, you needed to have a real scheme to get that done. It just wasn't a matter of, hey, why don't you go ahead and shoot, right? It took a whole team to do that when Toronto did it. It took a whole team to do it when Miami did it. And I wasn't sure that Brooklyn was in such a situation. And then James Harden got hurt 43 seconds into the series. Didn't matter. Brooklyn still blew Milwaukee's doors off. Still blew him out the gym. And I was like, well, you know, guess I got that one wrong. It happens from time to time. Sometimes you get something wrong. Then game three, Milwaukee pulled it out in the way that none of us expected. A win in the 80s. Both teams in the 80s. Did not see that coming. And then yesterday, Milwaukee put the hurt on Brooklyn, but only after Kyrie Irving suffered what appeared to be a severe ankle sprain. Like, I don't know if they've given that diagnosis yet, but that is what it looked like. I don't have a medical degree, but I do have an ankle. There are all kinds of injuries where I'm like, look, man, I don't really feel comfortable saying what I think this is or what it's going to be, everything else. I got an ankle. I have rolled it before. It looked like the ball on the side of his leg hit the ground. That looked like something vicious. I'm not betting on seeing Kyrie, definitely not next game. And I certainly would not want Kyrie Irving to be injured. But I do like being right. I would enjoy being right. I have rolled some snake eyes on some of the predictions and observations that I have made in the course of the 2021 season. And while you could say, yeah, but them dudes got hurt, were you really right? I was also factoring into the equation the possibility that the Nets, with their stars and their injury concerns, that it might also pop up in the playoffs, thereby actually making me quite possibly even more right than I was in the beginning of this. Prayers up, you know what I'm saying? I wish Kyrie and his ankle all the best. I would love to know his own personal training regimen. Right? Like when he goes in there and they try to give him some of the stuff that they got there and he's like, no, I need something from the earth. Right? And he rubs some of that Mr. Miyagi juice on it, hoping to get it right. Like all these things that I could possibly see. But now Milwaukee is back out here looking good. And let me tell you something. If I am Freaky Greeky, we definitely need to win these series under these circumstances. I would say that if I'm Mike Budenholzer, we need to win these series under these circumstances. But quite honestly, I don't feel like he has comported himself like a man whose job is on the line, even though we all know that that man's job is on the line. I'm like, yo, you want to try something different? Like, yeah, you don't really seem to have nothing. You don't want to find no easy ways for your best player to get shots. Like, it seems obvious that him getting them himself, it ain't really working. Like, you don't want to come up with anything. And Budenholzer's like, man, my money guaranteed. I've been rich. or he just thinks it's impossible for him to get fired. I mean, don't forget, this is a man that caught a DUI, didn't get fired, and then like right after he got the job, and then I want to say 2 years later, messed around and became the president of basketball operations. So, like, you know, I get it. I don't know what white dudes are scared of at work, to be perfectly honest. Like, I don't know what it takes for them to be like, oh, damn, I might lose my job for this. I have no idea. They've been keeping their job through thick and thin. I have no explanation for what it is right there. But Giannis, if I'm Giannis, I myself personally, we kind of need to get this done. Because look, what has happened to him in these playoffs? And I want to be careful because in game four, he had 30-something points. So I don't want to act like he's just been totally useless. But he is totally in his head on the free throws thing. Like, it is clearly a mental situation on the free throws or just shooting in general, right? Like, it's just tying him up in knots. We all see that. However, the knock that we all had on Blake Griffin for his whole career has basically been defense. Like, defense and toughness. If Blake Griffin were a little bit tougher and a good bit better on defense, Blake Griffin might have, like, legitimately been the greatest power forward of all time. Like, I mean, not saying that he absolutely would have been, but he was that level of talent, except he was a kind of poor short-arm defender for most of his career, and that didn't really go. This dude has been the clamps on Giannis. And how has he been the clamps on Giannis? It's a pretty adventurous strategy. By not guarding Giannis. Like, that's what he's done. He's guarded Giannis by not guarding Giannis. They are treating him like the Warriors treated Tony Allen in that playoff series that year. They're basically treating him like people treated Andre Robertson. Self-check, because he always guarding himself. And if you want to keep it real, much of this series, it's been Giannis guarding himself. Giannis guarding himself on the free throw line. Giannis guarding himself for 15 feet. Giannis guarding himself in all these different places. Like with Robertson, he just couldn't shoot. With Giannis, it feels like he's legitimately guarding himself. And if they were to lose a series under those circumstances, with the Nets being depleted, right? Like, now that we're down to Kevin Durant and the Pips, this would be a staggering indictment of Giannis. Staggering. And a reminder, you gotta have some moves inside. If you're going to be that tall, no matter who you are, you have got to be able to just put your back to people and score. Like, and we've talked about this before. I used Dirk Nowitzki previously as an example. We can go up and down the line. Kristaps Porzingis is another guy that we've talked about in this way. But the bottom line is, there's no point in being tall if you can't put your back to somebody. Unless you are just, again, a Dirk Nowitzki, Kevin Durant type of shooter. Otherwise, they just gonna back off you and look at you and be like, all right, big homie, you got it. And then you gonna miss a couple. And then you gonna be Giannis, trapped in your own head. You know what I mean? Now, these issues, if they were to win in this round, these issues do probably still come up, right? You're probably still going to be guarded in a very similar way. And it's going to be interesting if we wind up with a series like Philadelphia and Milwaukee with Ben Simmons and Giannis. But the difference is, at least Giannis is going to get out here and try. You know, like, it would be so wild if we wind up with these futuristic bigs, because Ben Simmons is in effect a futuristic big who can't do big stuff. And Ben Simmons, who also can't do like significant little stuff. Hey, say this though, for Ben Simmons, at least Ben Simmons got that little jump hook. Like, Giannis does not have that little jump hook. At least Ben Simmons has that. By the way, fun fact from this series, Gabe, I don't know if you know this. Do you know who the all-time leading scorer in Nets history is?
It's not Richard Jefferson, is it?
Brooke Lopez.
That makes sense.
Yeah, well, it makes sense because nobody stays with the Nets for very long. That's the big reason why it makes sense. People get out of here pretty quick. That tends to be the explanation. But let me tell you about what I've loved about this series. Like, why I've loved this series. Game four was excellent. Like, just a fantastic, great, enjoyable game to watch. And game three was also very entertaining because there was such urgency to the buckets. Right? Like, the one thing about turning up the knob on the points, right? Like, turn up the volume on that. Buckets don't feel as urgent, right? It felt like everybody had to fight for everything that they got in these last two games. And that, to me, at least growing up, that's how the playoffs always felt. Like, that, to me, is how the playoffs are supposed to feel. They're supposed to feel at times like, damn, man, we can't get nothing to happen. We just gonna have to go out here and make it happen. That's what this is supposed to feel like when you get to the postseason. And so what happens with all these jumpers, really, just generally speaking, there's some guys that when they're hitting J's, it feels like they're making it happen. Like when Steph Curry's out here killing you out there, it feels like he's making it happen. Donovan Mitchell has reached that point where he's like, look, I'm making this happen. But otherwise, it really feels in large part like you kind of at, I don't want to say the whim, but it's just kind of the luck of the draw with jumpers to a degree. It's a high variance sort of activity. And I don't want to feel like, well, basically hockey, where the hot goalie wins. You know what I mean? No, I don't want the basketball to feel like, yo, we were hot shooting that week, and that's why we were able to get it done. Like, I want to feel like people are out here proactively making things happen or proactively stopping things from happening. And that's what the last two games of this series have felt like. They let them play on Sunday, and you got PJ Tucker muscling Kevin Durant, and Kevin Durant figuring out his way that he's going to get that done, you know, vice versa and all of that. That's what this is supposed to feel like. I am one of those people who agrees. Yes, we have better basketball players now than we have ever had, but we do not have better basketball. We don't. This felt like it. If you really think about it, and I just ask you to look back yourself, whoever you happen to be, think about how those games felt to watch, those last two games in that Milwaukee Nets series. Do you think they would have been better if it was like 130 to 125? Like, do you think that would have made it better? Because I don't think that would have made it better. I do not. By the way, I also want to send a shout out to the homie Bruce Brown. I love the fact that he went up for that layup. You know why? Because he's in the goddamn NBA. That's why, right? The play goes wonky. You get the ball. The lane is wide open. I hope that you think that you can make a layup in the presence of Brooke Lopez. Right? Like, maybe it didn't work out, but I saw something where the Nets were saying that if they thought Bruce Brown made a mistake, is that he ain't try to yam on him. Like, it amazed me. Everybody's out there, yo, you right there by the rim and you ain't passed the ball to Kevin Durant. And I'm like, dog, this is where our interpretations and understanding of modern basketball have just gotten ridiculous. The idea that we're going to tell a guy in the lane that you should have given the ball to somebody all the way over there. Like, maybe you could make an argument that instead of going all the way to the rack, that Brown should have taken a floater or something like that, or like a pull-up J from the free throw line. Okay, now maybe we could talk. But no, if I am an NBA player with any confidence and dignity, I'm going to see if I can make a layup at the rim. Boom, period. That's what it's going to be. Everybody else tried to make that man seem like he was Carlton. Carlton stole the ball from Will and then threw the ball up there with the baseball pass situation. That's not what our man Bruce Brown did. Bruce Brown, and if you watch Bruce Brown play, he eager. Like, the one thing I did say, though, like, he is a little too eager, but that was the time. You need some cats that's out here eager. You need some dudes that's out here that's not afraid to shoot. Otherwise, everybody's just quadruple teaming Kevin Durant. And that ain't going to be a win. We're going to see how the rest of this series goes. And you know, man, big thing for me is, you know why the Bucks are doing this, right? Sometimes it's about the guys on the floor. Sometimes it's about the guy that's not on the floor. Doing it for White Dante, the heart and soul of the team. So, how about those Phoenix Suns? Before we get to those Phoenix Suns, how about Serbia? Like, I want to get to the Suns because the Suns won the series and the Suns swept, and that is very impressive. And they look really good, right? And there's a measure of crow that I got to eat about how good they look, but they look really good. But before we get there, I want to send my own personal send off, because don't nobody else in my business really want to do this, to the MVP, Nikola Jokic, who he was great in the playoffs too. He was great in the regular season. He's out here carrying this team with all the guys that have been hurt, and then Michael Porter's out there with a bad back, you know, all that stuff, right? The MVP had a 30-20 triple-double the other day, and them boys got their doors blown off. 30-20 triple-double, and they got their doors blown off. They just didn't have the bodies by the time it came down to it. Now, Jokic was not, obviously, like the same force that he was in the regular season, where he had one of the greatest seasons of all time, and he has not been the same force that he was in 2019, his first playoff series, where he might have been the best player in the playoffs that year. He's been a very good player in the playoffs since, but he hasn't been that. But he is still, I mean, first round, all that y'all say about Dame and how good Dame is, and I think Dame is that good, and we treat Dame like he's a superstar caliber player, the MVP, send them boys home on their own court. And it's not as though the Nuggets have some great talent advantage outside of Jokic over the Blazers. It's not like they got this great talent advantage outside of Jokic, right? But again, we spent the playoffs and basically this whole season somehow acting like the MVP isn't or wasn't a big deal, right? That's what we've done. But this is why I wanted to send that shout out to Serbia. Gabe, we talked about this here. I think me and Foxworth talked about it last week. Where I keep trying to explain to people, you don't know where it is that these cats come from. You don't know what they've been through. You don't know what they synced. You don't know any of those things. Jokic got that MVP, and the Jokic brothers came for him to get the MVP. Did you see the Jokic brothers? Google right now for the Jokic brothers and see if you can get you a picture. Nikola Jokic's brothers. And all I'm going to say for you here is Nikola Jokic came from wherever those boys came from. You seen them? They remember the war. You know what I'm saying? They remember the gloomiest. They have seen some things. Like, yeah, nah. I kept trying to tell y'all that. And then this came up in the game when Jokic got himself ejected on Sunday night. And Jokic got ejected because this dude said that he was trying to, like, make a play with some intensity. You know what I mean? Like, you know, because the game was losing. Here's the problem, man. If you want to show your intensity in the NBA, the way you do that is like fighting for rebounds or diving for loose balls. Instead, Jokic wanted to try to turn the emotion of the game by knocking the shit out of the ball when Cameron Payne had it. And he did. And on the way to knocking the shit out of the ball, he knocked the shit out of Cameron Payne. And Cameron Payne was on the ground for a minute. Serbia got heavy hands. And so he's rolling on the ground. And so in a moment like that, you know, a dude does, if you're on the Suns, somebody got to go stand up for your man, right? Like, you just can't have that. The ejection, I thought, was warranted because it was reckless. Like, that was the way to put it. I don't think he was trying to hit dude in the head, but there's a reason why you don't rear back like that. And so I got it. So somebody had to go get in Jokic's face because that's what you got to do. And so Devin Booker, Grand Rapids, Michigan's own, decided to take it upon himself to be the guy to go get in Jokic's face. And he went to go get in Jokic's face. And you know what it looked like? It looked like if you was driving up a hill and you smashed the gas to go up that hill, but then something happened and you like slow down and then you just take your foot off the gas and then you slowly start going backward down that hill. That's what happened to Devin Booker. Devin Booker ran up on Jokic. Jokic turned, looked at him, and Jokic non-aggressively kept walking toward him. And Devin Booker kept slowly going a little farther back. He misunderstood what Serbia had in mind. Serbia had no fear whatsoever. And I was like, ah, yes, thank you. That's what we got. I've been curious about this. But look, man, that dude has such a cold year. And what frustrates me about the way that we as media have dealt with this is, generally speaking, we decide what y'all care about. Like, we curate, we frame, we put things out there, and it dictates the questions that people ask each other, whether they're at the barbershop or they're on Twitter or wherever it is that they talk about sports on message boards, whatever it is. The media typically does this. What's happened with Jokic is a legitimately amazing story. He's the lowest drafted MVP that there has ever been. Like, we've decided we're not doing the work. And this is an error that I think that has ultimately hurt the NBA, which is, we know y'all like LeBron, so we just giving you all the LeBron. And then the big, big names that are up there, we just give you more and more and more of who those big names are. And then something happens and a dude turns into a superstar caliber player while you're not looking. And we just like, oh, and Nikola Jokic and the whatchamacallits play against dot, 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 and all this stuff. Like, as you realize Jokic is the MVP, and especially when you get to the playoffs, the game's supposed to start with some montage of just incredible clips of incredible things that Jokic has done. Because I don't think most people understand how many actually incredible things that he manages to pull off because they don't see it. And then we don't wind up at all giving it to you. Like, there should be a discussion right now. I don't think it would be fair, but yo, Jokic won the MVP and they got swept. What's that all about? We're not even doing that, you know? But the West, once it deviated away from the names that we know and the names that we've seen for years, we don't even really understand how to push it anymore. We're not even really trying to get out here and push it. But if we act like these teams are big deals, they will be big deals. It don't matter what market they play in. John Stockton and Karl Malone, I don't know what kind of television draws they were, but they were big deals playing in Utah because we talked about them like they were big deals. And we don't really do that with Donovan Mitchell and Gobert, even though that team looks great. Like, that's not what we're doing. And then that brings us to the Suns, right? Now, I got into a kerfuffle with the Phoenix Suns fans who, you know, I ain't heard from in 10 years. Why would I? You know, y'all just ain't really come up. I get it. And they know they don't come up because anytime you say something about the Suns that they don't like, they accuse you of having never watched the Phoenix Suns. Now, this year, like once they got Chris Paul there, I ain't watch him every night. But early in the year, I did watch him just to get a look at what was going on. And I thought they looked pretty good, but I didn't think that they were as good as they have been in this postseason. Like, you can make the argument, Denver certainly depleted by injuries. The Lakers depleted by injuries, right? And what the Suns looked like was a really good team playing against a team depleted by injuries. They didn't look like a team that won because the other team was depleted by injuries. Like, they look like they got it. They look like they got something. Now, anyway, as it was going, when Devin Booker didn't make the All-Star team at first, and then he wound up being the alternate. Devin Booker's a dude that everybody loves when he doesn't make the All-Star team. How could Devin Booker not make the All-Star team? And the answer is because it's a lot of really good players in the NBA. And so, like, I looked at who the dudes were that were on the All-Star team. You could make the argument that Booker was one of them, but I did not think that it was an affront to him or an indicator of some other thing that Devin Booker was not there. But I got on Twitter and I said, Devin Booker's a dude. I think he's a dude that's fun to watch, but is not like a game-changing player. And the point that I was simply trying to make was he's not the guy that if you don't say X, Y, and Z about him, you're some kind of hater or you don't know about basketball. Like, I didn't think that at the time we were having this discussion that he was in that tier of player. He has damn sure looked like he is in that team of player in this postseason. Like, he has looked excellent. And one thing that I have to give him credit for, and this is where the Chris Paul thing comes up. There were points where they had before, like Booker basically had to play point guard. Like, it didn't feel like they had a plan. Like, when the people who are the Sixers, the process backers, their big thing is, well, is it better for us to just kind of meander around here and be sorry without some kind of plan? And I guess the argument is you don't want to be the Phoenix Suns, like that kind of thing, right? So it's just like, oh, you know, they missed the playoffs like 10 years in a row. So I got where it was that they were coming from. Yo, these dudes look like winners fast. Like, when you consider the fact that the majority of the guys on this team, this is the first time they've ever played any games that matter. Like, this is incredible. And I mean, and that includes Devin Booker. Like, they went out there and played them games in the bubble and that was cool, but this is the playoffs. And they look ready. Chris Paul looked like he got them ready. Monty Williams got them ready. And Devin Booker has been excellent and has looked like a game-changing kind of player. Right? Like, he's looked like that dude. I can't think of any situation that's quite comparable to this. And so, and for Chris Paul, who, like, let's get this straight. Chris Paul's been really good. This is not near the best Chris Paul that we have ever seen. Those LA Clipper years of Chris Paul were some of the best point guard seasons that anybody has ever played. He was lights out incredible. Like, I don't know if any player his height has ever played as well as he did in those stretches. And he's still really good. But what I think is happening here with this team is less about how good he is than James Jones, who everybody around the league, like the player types when he got that GM job, were like, nah, watch, see what happens. And I've seen this is a really well put together roster. When you start talking about, oh, they passed on Doncic to take DeAndre Ayton, here's the one thing I'll say about that. Line up all the dudes that were in that draft. Like, if you don't know anything about them, you hadn't watched no film, put all them dudes up against the wall. I know who the number one pick would be. DeAndre Ayton. And he's been good. He's been, like, bordering on excellent in this postseason. So you put a guy like that out there with Chris Paul, and he's not just being, like, setting screens and being a rim runner. Like, we saw Tyson Chandler, the best version of him, was playing with Chris Paul and basically being that kind of guy. But Ayton's also getting the ball on the block and doing things. He did a good job defending Jokic in the course of this. Mikal Bridges has been strong out there. It's a really well-structured and put-together team with Chris Paul in a position that, again, he might have needed to age into. I said this about Rondo. For Rondo, like, to get the most out of Rondo, because Rondo really got on everybody's nerves when he was younger because he knew more than everybody else and told everybody he knew more than everybody else, right? Chris Paul was in that same place, and like, he wore out his welcome in Los Angeles. Like, everybody got tired of each other. Because you're Blake Griffin, you don't necessarily want to hear it. You're DeAndre Jordan, you don't necessarily want to hear it. You're Mikal Bridges, you kind of got to roll with it, you know? And Chris is now basically an extension of the head coach because his relationship with Monty Williams, they are so close, right? They're basically extensions of each other. And so now he's Papa Bear in the way that is probably best for the team that he's on and for him. And they looked excellent. And they pointed out, like, Michael Porter Jr., who you guys know I am bullish on, he don't need to take a single jump shot all offseason. He needs to spend all offseason guarding people. Because when Chris Paul had that crazy run in game four, he was just making all those mid-range shots. That wasn't about the greatness of Chris Paul. Most of those shots were shots that anybody in the NBA would make. They were such easy shots, but he was getting those easy shots because they basically had one plan. We're screening and we're screening until we get to Porter. And then Porter reached a point where he didn't even want to switch because he knew that's what they were doing. Basically, Michael Porter was saying, we'd be better off if I didn't play any defense at all than if I tried. Like, that's basically where they were. But no, man, this is great for the NBA. We just have to stop acting like it's disappointing that somebody else won other than the dudes who win all the time. Like this right here with the Suns. We got new blood, old blood, all at the same time. That's great. That's absolutely fantastic. If we get Utah and Phoenix, yeah, it's going to be pretty bad for the ratings. It won't be so bad on the Phoenix part because Phoenix, like, metro area is huge. You know, Salt Lake City, completely different story. But, like, for the ratings, it might not be great. But for the NBA, it should be fantastic. We'll have Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert. Like, these are players, man. Like, these aren't average dudes. These are really, really, really good players. You get, like, the DeAndre Ayton type introducing himself to America. Like, it's here. The NBA has to start acting like they're excited about it, though. Like, that's where I think they slip. They need to be like, yo, this is great, and here's why. All the network partners, everybody broadcasting these games, that's what they need to be saying. Yo, this is excellent, and let me tell you why. Because the truth is, these playoffs have been good. These playoffs have given us intensity. These playoffs have had personality. These playoffs have been playoffs like I remember playoffs being. Except I don't feel like it's necessarily the playoffs that people wanted, and they stuck on that part. Nah, man, enjoy this. This is great basketball. This looks like the future of the NBA, and everybody needs to lean in on that, including the NBA.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from science.
Hi, my name is Christian Davenport, and I write about space for the Washington Post. I'm also the author of a book, The Space Barons, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and the quest to colonize the cosmos. I recently wrote a story for the Post about space tourism and about how the very wealthy can now opt to buy tickets to, yeah, space, which is fast becoming the sort of new adventure vacation. I mean, why would you charter a luxury yacht or go on an African safari or go to the Caribbean when you can do somersaults in zero gravity and see the Earth from a great distance? But hey, this is not cheap. I mean, Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic in the past was charging about $250,000 for tickets in its space plane called Spaceship Two, which flies straight up to the edge of space, roaring its engines going about three times the speed of sound before falling back down. But it hasn't sold tickets for a while now, and when they reopen sales later this year, they're expected to charge about $500,000. Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin has not said what it's going to charge for similar flights. Again, these are suborbital, going straight up and then coming straight down. We're talking about being a mission that can last about 10 minutes where you're in space for a total of about 4 minutes or so. But yet, it's holding an auction for a seat on its very first human spaceflight mission. A few thousand people people have already bid, driving the price into the millions. And oh, by the way, if you win, your crewmate is going to be Jeff Bezos himself and his brother Mark, who's also going to be going along. And then, of course, there's Elon Musk and SpaceX. I mean, they fly a much more powerful rocket, the Falcon 9, that goes all the way to orbit, even to the space station. They've got a few missions on the books now. The price for going, say, to the International Space Station and taking a week-long vacation from Earth up on that orbiting laboratory, $55 million. The training for all these missions, though, the companies say is relatively light. Elon has said that, hey, if you can survive an intense roller coaster, you can go to space on his Dragon spacecraft, no problem. And, you know, Blue Origin, Virgin Galactic have said you're going to have to be able to deal with some heavy G-forces, several times your own body weight, but ultimately most people are going to be able to do that. That's the point. They want to send a lot more people to space. They say anyone can do it, of course, if you can afford it.
What is there to do in space? He's like, why charter a yacht? I know what there is to do on a yacht. Why go on a safari? I understand what there is to do on a safari. Now we go to space. Now what? Where's my hotel? What's there for us to do on the resort? You guys want to go to the beach tomorrow? No, none of these are options. I'm just in space. Ah, if you can take a trip on a roller coaster, you can take a trip to space. But it's a roller coaster at least. What activities do you have for me in space?
This is literally spending $500,000 to say that you've been to space.
That's it. And guess what? I've been to space. I just did it for free. Space gonna have to get some amenities. Space gonna have to get some activities. Imagine that. You go, you and your wife, and you're like, yeah, anniversary coming up. You're trying to go to space. What are we gonna do in space? Backflips. What about after that? Nah, we're just gonna do backflips. I'm going to space. What are you, 8 years old? Like, every time I see these people that are like, yo, I just want to take a trip to space. I'm like, what are you, 8 years? Like, really? You want a pet dinosaur, too?
I've got the photos. They'll say it's Photoshopped.
Yeah. Let's spend $1 million and go to space. You must be high.
Did you catch that, like, Amazon space program is run kind of like their business and Tesla's space program is kind of run like their business?
Yes. This is definitely, to me, this definitely feels like a high idea. Dude, let's go to space. That's it. Being high in space. I can see why you might want to try.
All right, this next story comes from business.
This is Jeff Ernst, journalist based in Central America and reporting for Vice News. The story begins at the annual Bitcoin conference held this year in Miami with about 12,000 attendees. By way of a video appearance, the president of El Salvador, Nayib Bukele, announced that his country was going to become the first in the world to make Bitcoin legal tender. Or in other words, make it so you can use Bitcoin for any and all of your daily transactions, whether it's going to the grocery store, buying dinner at a restaurant, whatever. For cryptocurrency backers, this is a huge deal. Until now, Bitcoin has mostly been used as a form of investment like stock, not as a currency. Now, President Bukele is an interesting guy. The 39-year-old is wildly popular in his country. We're talking approval ratings that hover between 80 and 90%. He's a former marketer with a flair for the dramatic, so this kind of announcement is right up his alley. But many started questioning how this would actually work and what kind of unintended consequences there might be. One of the things that makes people worry is the relative anonymity offered by cryptocurrencies. We know that they've been used by criminals to avoid the transactions being traced, and El Salvador is known as a hotbed of criminal activity, in particular by gangs and drug traffickers. The fear is that making Bitcoin a legal tender could attract all kinds of unscrupulous people who want to launder money. It could lead to other problems too, particularly for small businesses who don't have the resources or the know-how to use Bitcoin to their advantage. Over the past couple of years, a couple surfing villages on the Pacific coast have been experimenting with using cryptocurrency for daily transactions. A number of vendors have reported losing money due to the currency's volatility. For example, the value of Bitcoin dropped 36% over the month of May. Imagine being a poor person with $100 in Bitcoins. Losing 36 bucks would hurt. In the end, other countries better suited than El Salvador to adopt Bitcoin might steal the country's steam. Lawmakers in a number of countries, including Panama, which has long been the financial capital of Central America, as well as a preferred destination for money launderers and the like, have announced their intentions to follow El Salvador's lead.
I was wondering if he was going to mention that last part about Panama. Panama City? What if Miami wasn't pretty? If you've been to Panama City, you're going to be like, damn, you're right. That's exactly it. Now, Gabe, have you looked at a picture of President Bukele? Of El Salvador?
I have.
Does he not look like the guy that's trying to talk you into this funny money?
Oh, he looks like exactly the guy.
All right. And I just want to read to you the last sentence of his Wikipedia page entry. 20 government institutions of the Bukele administration were under investigation by the Attorney General's office until, in May 2021, Bukele led a parliamentarian move to fire the Attorney General and multiple Supreme Court justices of El Salvador, which has been characterized as a self-coup and sparked fears of democratic backsliding and a power grab. All I'm saying is that's the guy that wants to make funny money legal tender.
I didn't even think about the part of it about, you know, little mom and pops not being able to accept cryptocurrency.
Yeah, no, but I don't see the value. Like, I get the argument that people would make is like they want to get Bitcoin and then basically all these people who do monetary policy for all these countries, you know, behind the euro, behind the dollar and everything else, their power is weakened and then everybody can then use Bitcoin. But the ability to use cryptocurrency doesn't feel to me nearly as beneficial in a world where we do everything digitally anyway. Like, if they had gotten on the digital before anybody else did, I'd be like, oh, okay, I see what you're saying, but why do I need to spend Bitcoin when I got this USD, these dollars? Funny money, funny money. Anyway, go look up that dude and just be like, that's the dude that's about this funny money.
This last story comes from Science, and even though the reporters couldn't join us for it, I just thought it was way too good of a story to not do. So at the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, there were some tourists that tried feeding peanut butter balls to some bears, and the bears had to be tranquilized because of it. Your thoughts?
Why y'all can't just go watch? You know what I'm saying? And yeah, and if you think I'm talking about you when I say y'all, I am. Why y'all just can't go watch? Why do people feel the need to interact so intimately with the animals on these things? Especially the animals that can kill you. Oh no, I'm sure they would love some peanut. How do you know they like peanut butter? They eat all kinds of stuff that you don't like. How do you know they like what you like? See, everybody turn into grandma when they get around these animals, forcing them to eat stuff that they don't even like.
I was going to say, what cartoon do bears like peanut butter in?
Like, if you had a bottle of honey, I've seen that cartoon. I could imagine that. You know, I was a little disappointed that the bears got sick as opposed to, you know, the bears ate the people. I know they like how that tastes.
Well, the bears didn't get sick. They had to be tranquilized because the people were on their bears turf.
Look, man, you go messing with the bear, I'm team bear all the time. Gang got to have rules.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. Voicemail time today. We went back to the ever popular pros versus Joes. That time you came up on a future professional and lost. Had a number of good entries, like always. First, the guy conveniently didn't give his name, but he was from Orlando.
So I grew up in Orlando, Florida, and I used to play basketball at the YMCA, midnight basketball. And Amari Stoudemire, back in the day, he was going through a lot of high schools, just some, you know, some family stuff that I think is pretty well known. So anyway, playing midnight basketball one day, and I hit a three on him, and I was feeling pretty good about myself. And I kind of turned around and maybe shimmied a little bit. Next time down the floor, I'm pretty sure he took off from the free throw line at the other end of the basketball court and dunked on me so hard, I think I may have had a concussion. And when the game was over, not only did we all kind of stick around and watch in awe, just think about young Amari, pre-NBA, dunking it. He dunked the ball so hard that, you know, those YMCA courts with the cables that are all connected to the hoops all over the place? He dunked it so hard in one hoop, another hoop on the other end of the gym came crashing down and broke. And he just looked around like, was that me? Yeah, that's it. I never, ever, ever talked again to a professional player. And there's a lot of them that used to go over there.
Duh, he said, I may have hit him with a shimmy for a three. You earned that, buddy. You earned that. I'd have been all the way in my modesty bag. All the way.
May have.
All right.
This next comes from our guy, Ian Virginia.
So I was a pretty good basketball player back in high school. Went on to play college ball. So I have a few pros to pick from. But J.J. Redick is probably the best. We had a bit of a history. I played him when we were younger, and actually we smashed the team when we were younger. So going into senior year, we played an AAU tournament in Richmond, and I actually held him down to, like, somewhere in the teens, low teens. It was actually a pretty good game for me. We lost that game, so had a shot run out at the buzzer. But for regional championship that year, we traveled from Northern Virginia down to Roanoke to play his team. And my coach decided to not have me defend him that game, even though I did pretty well over the summer. He wanted my point guard to guard him, so the point guard was also a very good defender. But the problem was the point guard was 5'9". So JJ comes out, first couple of sessions doesn't do anything, then decides to run off the screen, bangs a three right over him. Nothing my guy can do, he's too short. JJ's 6'4". Come back, next possession, does the same thing. So now JJ's got a little bit of rhythm going. Then, next three possessions, his point guard hits a couple threes, and our scouting report said he wasn't much of a shooter. So now we're all in disarray, we're in a hole. So coach looks at me and decides, all right, go get him. And I'm like, well, what do you want me to do? And JJ, I guess, had remembered me from the summer. So he caught the ball out at the volleyball line around half court, which is essentially Steph Curry, Dame Lillard range in high school, and just let it fly. I'm telling you, I'd say nothing but net, but the net never moved. I mean, it just went straight through, like the net wasn't even there. And he was out there talking trash like Larry Bird, like, you know, good job, better luck next time. Like, it was insane. He dropped 43 in that game. And people were actually coming up to me after the game, talking about, yeah, that's the best defense you've ever seen somebody play on. You really made him work that at 43. And I was like, man, that was just another knife in the back.
You really made him work for that 43. Dag. Yeah, normally these involve like people get yammed on and stuff like that. Nah, JJ hit you rated threes. And I love that again. He was like, nope, time for me to talk to you. I recall how it went the last go round.
Do you know JJ a little bit?
Yeah.
Does he strike you as his trash talker?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. Ain't no fear in that one at all. The JJ Duke years definitely were not quiet ones. JJ Awesome, do you have any clue what I had to do to get here? I don't think you do. Like JJ had to deal with Mo Hell in college of anyone in recent memory. Like, it wasn't like a Patrick Ewing level or anything like that. But nah, JJ was not about this back down.
All right, our last one comes from a guy in Meridian, Mississippi. He didn't leave his name, though.
1997, Meridian, Mississippi. It was a guy by the name of Kenyatta Walker who went to play on for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers playing left tackle for a team by the name of Meridian. I was a 6'2", 210-pound linebacker. This man picked me up like a newborn baby, held me in the air like Simba Lion King and told me, don't move. And all I could say was, man, damn, I ain't going nowhere, man. Just let it down. And it was terrible, man.
He said, don't move. And you was like, I mean, I had planned to, but it wasn't an option. Oh, that's humbling. Just like, yo, don't move. It'll only make it worse. Like, that was the only part that was missing. It'll only make it worse. And I love my man telling that story in the way. He has told this story many times. He's just like, somebody needed to understand this. I was a 6'2", 210-pound linebacker. So, again, not a small man, right? Not a little dude. Don't move. All right, dog. I'll do that. I guess not. You win. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Christian Davenport of The Washington Post. Check out his story about people going on vacation in space at WashingtonPost.com. Thanks to Jeff Ernst of Vice News. Check out his story about Bitcoin becoming the national currency of El Salvador at Vice.com. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.